Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're discussing with Adele Hite, who's head of the Healthy Nation Coalition, a letter which lays out objections to the perpetuation of our current dietary guidelines for Americans, dietary guidelines which have been resoundingly unsuccessful. We're seeing a skyrocketing of degenerative disease in this country. And a lot of people think we've taken a wrong turn in terms of advocating a low-fat, low animal protein, grain and vegetarian-based diet. Nothing wrong with fruits and vegetables, by the way, but placing starchy carbohydrates at the base of the food pyramid was certainly a misguided decision. So she has drafted a letter along with colleagues, which is addressed to Secretary Burwell and Secretary Vilsack. I guess that's USDA and FDA, correct?
HHS.
Oh, HHS, Health and Human Services. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful letter, and I recommend that you go to her website, eathropology.com. I guess it's like anthropology, but with the word eat.
Yeah.
In front of it. So it's eathropology.com. You can also go to healthynationcoalition.com, is it, or .org?
.org.
Okay, healthynationcoalition.org to get the full letter. And plus, there's some handy tools. It's a call to action that will enable you to personalize a letter and send it to your the secretaries of HHS and FDA and also to your legislator, if you want. To have an impact on the reshaping of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. It's almost 2015. We need to get on the stick if we want to get ahead of this, because otherwise we're going to have the same lousy dietary guidelines that have been ineffective and worse yet, even potentially harmful to Americans. So what are some of the high points in the letter that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I think what people need to know is that our dietary guidelines seem to have contributed to the rapid rise of chronic disease in America. I think that there is this impression that is perpetuated in the media, and it's perpetuated by the government itself, that people have simply been non-compliant, that people haven't bothered to try to eat what they consider to be a healthy diet, that people have not tried to reduce their fat or switch from animal fats to vegetable oils. But in fact, all of the information that we have is that Americans really have shifted their diets.
So it's not, some people would say, well, the reason Americans are sicker is they haven't complied with the dietary guidelines. Actually, you're saying that by and large, the food industry has been pretty cooperative. They created a lot of products, and Americans are,
absolutely,
you know, everybody's cholesterol phobic, fat phobic. The message has gotten across. What good has it done?
In terms of health outcomes, I mean, you're right. So our cholesterol levels have actually gone down, and so have our blood pressure levels in the past 30 years. But our rates of obesity and diabetes has gone up, and diabetes is especially a devastating disease. It's long, expensive, painful, chronic disease to have, and really, really devastating complications. And it's tripled since the dietary guidelines have come out. So when we hear our policymakers talk about the cost of health care and all of these issues, the fact that they have failed to look at these dietary guidelines and failed to evaluate them on the basis of the health outcomes of Americans, it's outrageous, really.
And you point out, in terms of some specifics of the letter, you say, well, you know, choline happens to be a very important nutrient. And in this new version of the dietary guidelines that is coming down the pike, choline sources, which are primarily eggs and meats to some extent, particularly organ meats. Organ meats are rich in choline, but they're also high in cholesterol and saturated fat. There won't be enough choline to assure normal development for children and normal brain function for adults and other important bodily functions.
So our current choline intakes are quite low. There's only about 15% of the population that gets adequate choline. And yeah, so eggs are a wonderful source of choline, along with being a wonderful source of protein and nutrition in general. And what we have done is prioritize this limitation of cholesterol over the acquisition of choline. So we're being told you need to limit your intake of cholesterol, which might possibly, in some cases, maybe cause some increased risk of heart disease for some small portion of the population. But choline that everybody needs, and it's especially important for young children and for women who are pregnant to prevent disease down the line. So we're looking at, we're restricting the intake of a nutrient that is going to affect the health of generations to come. And we're doing it simply because of these outdated, outmoded, and ineffective guidelines.
And you make an interesting point in this. I'm reading ahead here, that this has resulted in a huge federal and state bureaucracy, which is administering these guidelines as if they were the ultimate truth. But it's become sort of a bureaucratic Tower of Babel. You write, the DGA, the Dietary Guidelines, began as an unmandated consumer information booklet. Okay, so they want to be helpful to the consumer. You know, offer some tips. Okay, maybe that's a role of government.
It's essentially a brochure.
Right. But now, so then you say that it's now morphed into a powerful political document that regulates a vast array of federal programs and services, dictates nationwide nutrition standards, influences agricultural policies and health-related research, and directs how food manufacturers target consumer demand. And despite their broad scope, the dietary guidelines are subject to no evaluation or accountability process based on health outcomes. And that's a problem because it's...
No checks and balances.
It would be as if this is just a vast, uncontrolled experiment, and there's no exit ramp from this.
And you're exactly right about that. There is... I spent a semester in Washington looking for that exit ramp, looking for that policy lever. And one of the things that is really disturbing is that it simply does not exist. The mandate around the dietary guidelines, which didn't appear until after the dietary guidelines had been being produced for a decade, it's sort of vague, and it puts a lot of power in the agencies themselves, in the USDA and Department of Health and Human Services, and there's no accountability. There's zero accountability. If their dietary guidelines don't work, it makes no difference to them. It's not like their funding changes. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to change their public health message. They don't have to change their program or practices. They can simply blame the American people and move on and continue to issue the same guidance that's been ineffective.
Right. They can either cop out by saying, well, you're not really following the dietary guidelines to a T, or maybe the problem is you're not exercising enough. You know,
it's fault and not their fault.
Right. Exactly. So let me be the devil's advocate for a moment here. Are you suggesting that there be virtually no messaging from the federal government? You know, they've got skin in the game because, you know, we're talking about healthcare costs here, you know, the way that things are going, health expenditures are going to sink our federal budget. Shouldn't there be some messaging? Aren't you afraid that without some messaging to some degree, telling people to eat this or that or the other thing, we're going to have chaos in the marketplace? They're going to offer all kinds of high caloric, fat laden foods to people.
I would say I can address that on two points. One is, could it get worse?
Okay,
so we issued these dietary guidelines that told people to reduce their intake of animal fats and to increase their intakes of grains and cereals. Obesity rates doubled and our diabetes rates tripled. So it's hard to imagine that slope of that graph could get any steeper than it already is.
Right.
So first of all, I think Americans are smarter than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that some guidance is appropriate, but it should be based on the science that we that it's non-controversial, that we can stand behind clinically, and that we know applies to all Americans. And that those are guidelines based on adequate intake of essential nutrition from food. So Americans need to know that they need some source, whether it's animal-based or it's plant-based, of high-quality protein at every meal. Protein is our most important macronutrient. Right. There's essential fatty acids that we need, and there's
and that messaging is not really happening. They're not saying, they're not emphasizing enough that people need more omega-3s rather than the omega-6s that they tell us to guzzle because it's low-fat. I mean, it's polyunsaturated vegetable oil.
Nope. Yep. So our essential nutrition, which applies to everyone, it's pretty simple and straightforward. I mean, it's not that we've closed the book on that science. There's still much more to be done, but we do have consensus around a lot of these essential nutrients, and it's simple and straightforward. The American public does not want the government micromanaging their diet. We all have different risk factors. We all have different needs. We all have different food traditions. Just tell us how to eat so that we can get the essential nutrition that everybody literally needs. And let us figure it out.
And don't create perverse incentives for bad food, for cheap sources of carbohydrates, because we have agricultural support for corn manufacturers and for sugar manufacturers, and that artificially subsidizes these cheap sources of calories.
And it puts labels on foods that, you know, so that you can pick up a sugar-filled carton of fat-free yogurt, and it says, you know, fat-free and cholesterol-free.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not...
And it might even have a heart-healthy label from the American Heart Association.
Right. That's not helpful information. But if it, you know, contains calcium, take those fat-free and all those other related to chronic disease labels off these packages, and... is in there that our body actually needs.
Indeed. Could it be said that, you know, we're, I think it, all these things, it's, they have the best intentions. You know, the Michelle Obama initiative on nutrition for kids in school lunch program, you know, it's great because we don't want kids to go to school hungry, then they won't be able to think. We want to provide them with good nutrition because maybe they're not getting it at home. But then when we apply these very, very ideological guidelines to the food that's delivered, the food is either unpalatable or it's so meager that the kids are now, you know, there's this social media campaign, you know, where people are posting what the school lunches look like, and it's a joke.
Well, because we're taking everything off the table with these dietary guidelines. So fruits and vegetables are still okay, but no more refined carbohydrates. So if it's carbohydrate, so then you get these bizarro foods, you know, whole grain breaded chicken nugget kind of things.
Right.
And, you know, we still can't have whole foods like, you know, a beef patty or an egg or regular cheese, things that kids will eat. My son loves milk, but he only likes whole milk. So he goes to school, and he's not going to drink milk at all.
The watered-down milk, yeah.
Right. He has to drink the choices that are filled with sugar.
So yeah.
Chocolate milk or strawberry-flavored milk.
Wow.
And, you know, to me, this makes no sense. I mean, if nothing else, we should be able to have whole milk in our school lunch lunchroom.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's it's like a case study in... you know, the law of good intentions gone bad.
Yeah, law of unintended consequences.
Law of unintended consequences, absolutely. So what are some of the other salient points that you make in the letter that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, you mentioned that they're not actually providing us with our essential nutrition and. Not just choline, but that we know that if you try to follow, you mentioned sodium before, if you try to follow the sodium guidelines that the dietary guidelines puts out, that you're likely to end up with an inadequate supply of potassium and with a nutritionally inadequate diet in general. And studies that we've seen with children have shown that children on low-fat diets, they may get adequate calories, but there's a number of important essential nutrients, calcium, zinc, iron, food, nutrients that come from animal foods frequently, that are really limited and missing in these kids' diets. And I just really think that national policy should first, as with all doctors, all clinicians, we should do no harm. And if our guidelines are creating a situation where we're restricting and limiting essential nutrition, then we're creating harm. Now, you know, you can argue about whether or not you've contributed, these guidelines have contributed to the rise of chronic disease, but if they're limiting the intake of choline, 15% of our population is getting adequate choline, something has gone wrong. So I think that it's time that we just go back to the beginning and say, what are we trying to do with these dietary guidelines? These dietary guidelines were created without much forethought and without a great deal of oversight and with zero accountability and very little transparency. They play at transparency, but there's very little transparency. And they're just no longer appropriate for Americans. We're diverse. We understand risk factors and disease are much more complex than we thought they were back in the 1970s and the 1980s. The controversies that have dogged these guidelines from the beginning, the ones over saturated fat, the ones over cholesterol, the ones over vegetable oils that you've mentioned, the ones about all these grains.
Tropical oils, for example, the saturated, you know, coconut oil, we're now coming to realize, which is a pure saturated fat, has many health benefits, and yet we've demonized it. And, you know, it's now, the science is actually now turning around on that, and we're coming to realize that that can be part of a healthy diet. So how successful has the campaign been already? It's been launched for a month or so, is that
about
correct?
About a month.
Okay.
Well, what I'm pleased about is the really broad base of supporters that we've gotten. We have close to 100 clinicians, so these are academics, so these are people who are doctors.
Please invoke my name, you know, to your heart's content, because I already signed on. But I mean, I don't know that I carry a lot of throw weight in, you know, Washington established medicine and science circles, but I'll certainly lend my whatever support I can.
Well, I think it's really important. You know, we have scientists sitting on these committees, and they're fine scientists. I know some of them. They're wonderful people, but they don't work with patients. They don't work with people. They work with data sets to a large extent. They work on policy. So they're not practicing clinicians. And we've gotten a lot of support from physicians, from dietitians, from pharmacists, from people who are out there in the world interacting with the public. And the public is confused and they're upset and they're unsuccessful following a diet that's similar to the dietary guidelines, and they want change. We're getting wonderful support from farmers and ranchers whose livelihoods have been affected by these dietary guidelines because they're just mystified. You know, for hundreds of years, my family had a ranch, and people valued the product, the meat product that we would produce, and now it's being demonized.
Well, it didn't help when Oprah launched her jihad against beef, and you know, there was a whole brouhaha back in the 90s when she took on the beef industry, which was unfortunate.
There's a lot of political machinations that go around, but we sometimes fail to look, as I said, at the bottom of the production chain, these farmers and ranchers who have been on the land, and those are the stewards of our land, of, you know, they're what nourish us as a nation. And for some of these populations, we've really thrown them under the bus.
Well, we've almost criminalized the act of farming, and certainly raising livestock because it's considered inhumane, politically incorrect, not ecological, contributing to climate change, you know, and the devastation of our ecology. Basically, that's the messaging.
Yeah, that is the message. And what's really unfortunate about that is that there's been a tremendous surge in interest in sustainable agricultural practices.
Yep.
So I talk
grass-fed meats and so on, organic and so on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talk a lot to the American Forage and Grasslands Council, who are the folks who have really been the movers and the shakers in this area. So they're really active in promoting and creating sustainable agricultural practices. A lot of these folks raise meat, raise animal products, and the dietary guidelines is throwing them under the bus too. So it doesn't matter if your practices are sustainable and environmentally sound and even beneficial to the environment, which is some of the things that I've been seeing coming out of these forage and grassland councils, is that they're using livestock to reclaim land that has been damaged, that is not producing, and they're using the livestock intervention to actually reclaim that land. But according to the dietary guidelines, it doesn't matter. All meat is bad.
Yeah, and that's not good. All right. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? How do people get on board with this initiative?
Well, I would like people to sign that letter, send it to their congressman, call up their congressman, but more than anything else, spread the word. I mean, policy, I'm afraid, is going to be the last thing to change. But we can all talk to a neighbor, talk to our friends, talk to our family members in our own household. We can stop being afraid. We can take our lives back. We can take our health back. We can take our diets back. And you know, what I've noticed is that once we stop worrying about micromanaging our diet in a way that the dietary guidelines is telling us to, I mean, it is part of public policy now that they are telling us to write down everything that we eat and all of the activity that we do so that we can track our calories. I think that's insane. But it does distract the public so that they can't complain. So I say, quit writing down your calories, mm-hmm. and quit reading all of these labels on the back of food. Go back to whole food, eat some eggs for breakfast, have meat if you feel like it, or not if you don't, you know, but go back to those whole foods. Don't be scared away by the dietary guidelines. Don't be scared away by these threats of, you know, environmental apocalypse. All I can say is, if the dietary guidelines do for the environment what they did for obesity and diabetes, we're in a lot of trouble.
Absolutely. And the specific resources for people to find the letter, the template that they can use to send to their legislators and to the agencies in question, that's located where?
Eatropology, which is my blog, and then the Healthy Nation Coalition blog. If you Google Healthy Nation Coalition, you will find us.
Indeed.
At the top of the heap.
Great.
Or a healthynation.org.
Well, so let me be the first to anoint you with an honorary doctorate. I know you're working on your PhD, but I'm going to sign off by referring to you as Dr. Height, which you soon will be. and for the time being, it's Adele. But, you know, we certainly appreciate this. It's a very important initiative. And I think that a lot of people from diverse ideologies about diet can get behind this notion that we don't need a monolithic and unwieldy bureaucracy telling us what to eat based on faulty science. We need to work on more science-based and realistic dietary guidelines to further the health of Americans.
Well, it has been my pleasure, and you are absolutely right that this is a broad-based coalition. You know, you don't even have to believe that saturated fat is good for you in order to get behind this, because even if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, the dietary guidelines are still unwieldy. They're still not producing the health outcomes that we expect them to produce. And so we have policy that just simply is not working. It's not transparent. It's not accountable to anybody. And all of us should be unhappy with that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on your initiative. And perhaps sometime in 2015, you can circle back and provide us with an update on what's happening in Washington, because I'm sure this is going to make waves, and this will maybe be one of the important political issues on the intelligent medicine front in the coming year. I'm sure it's going to come to a boil. All right. Thanks a lot, Adele, for joining us. I'm Dr. Thank Ronald you. Hoffman. Thank you. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.